Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour. In the Liberty Hill, Texas, today is May 24, 2014, or it is if 26, 2018. We will start our second service on this Sabbath day with a song entitled, In a Little While We're Going Home. Let us sing a song that will cheer us by the way. In this little while we're going home. The night will end in the everlasting day. In a little while we're going home. In a little while, in a little while, we shall cross the billows foam. We shall meet at last when the stormy winds are past. In a little while we're going home. We will do the work that our hands may find to do. In a little while we're going home. And the grace of Yah will our daily strength renew. In a little while we're going home. In a little while, in a little while, we shall cross the billows foam. We shall meet at last when the stormy winds are past. In a little while we're going home. We will smooth the path for some weary, wear-worn soul. We are a little while we're going home. And may loving hearts spread around influence sweet. In a little while we're going home. In a little while, in a little while, we shall cross the billows foam. We shall meet at last when the stormy winds are past. In a little while we're going home. There's a rest beyond, there's relief from every care. In a little while we're going home. And no tears shall fall in a city bright and fair. In a little while we're going home. In a little while, in a little while, we shall cross the billows foam. We shall meet at last when the stormy winds are past. In a little while we're going home. 144,000 part 2. We're on Shepherd God volume 1. A beat the heart if we're going to continue on where we left off. Do a little review. On our last study it says, after including every possible sin to a sinner in class 4, those who shall be resurrected and the martyrs in class 3, inspiration says, and beyond is the great multitude with the white robes and palms in their hand. Therefore, this company could not be classed with the other two or with the 144,000. If class 2, the great multitude, were the saved and resurrected from all ages, then all of the saved must have palms in their hands, but as it is plain that not all have the palms, then these are not all the saved of all ages, but are the translated ones only, besides the 144,000. The palm is a symbol of the victory over death and the grave. That is, they never died. Now again, speaking of the same company, we read in Revelation 7:14, last part. And he said unto me, these are they which came out of the great tribulation and have washed their robes, made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Thus this company went through the tribulation of Daniel 12, which is in the time of the seven last plague. Revelation 7:16. Okay, last part. And as I told you before, I believe that all the saved, once they are resurrected and joined together with the living, that the seven last plagues falls after probation closes. And I'm sure the saints will be living through that period, but they won't be touched by it. They go through the fourth plague, so it is clear that this company lives in the time of the end, at the second advent of Yahshua, to be translated. An explanation of the early writings, page 15, speaking of the announcement made of the coming of Yahshua, the day and the hour, which is before the general resurrection, and at the time of the special resurrection, we read, "Soon we heard the voice of Elohim like the many waters, which gave us the day and hour of Yahshua's coming. The living saints, 144,000 in number, knew and understood the voice, while the wicked thought it was thunder and an earthquake. And Elohim spoke the time he poured upon us the Holy Spirit, and our faces began to light up and shine with the glory of the Yahweh, as Moses did when he came down from the Mount Sinai. 144,000 were all sealed and perfectly united. On their foreheads was written, Elohim, New Jerusalem, and a glorious star containing Yahshua's new name. At a happy, holy state, the wicked were enraged, and would rush violently up to lay hands on us to thrust us into prison, when we would stretch forth the hand in the name of Yahweh, and they would fall helpless to the ground. We are not to understand that all who were present at this time and heard the announcement made of the day and the hour were the 144,000 only. For the language used makes it clear that there were more. For the pronouns we, us, they, and our are used in appointing to the 144,000, for the definite article the is used. She does not put herself as one of the 144,000, but instead the pronoun us is used. Therefore, there must be another company living besides the 144,000. Now we're looking at Elijah represents the 144,000, and as we've showed you before, that antitypical David is in the spirit and power of this Elijah. So, for the prophecy to camouflage the identity of this individual in the last days, David, the scientifical David, that's the reason why we have this here Elijah's name. Elijah is two parts of Yahweh's name, Eliyahu. So when Yahweh has a special messenger to for one reason, and that is to destroy all idolatry and to bring forth the purified kingdom. That's just what Elijah's work is. That's what it was in the type. Elijah Tishbite was to destroy idolatry out of Israel and to bring in a purified kingdom. And that's what his work accomplished. Likewise, John the Baptist did the same thing in his day. He was a forerunner of Yahshua. And he did the mighty work of the revival and reformation among the people of Jerusalem and surrounding areas that came into hearing. They were all sanctified and purified by the message that John had to offer them with the baptism. And so there was a great revival and reformation effected in his day. Yahshua was the one that worked with that revival and reformation to make it happen. That's who worked with Elijah the Tishbite when he went up to Mount Carmel that day and confronted Ahab and the 850 false prophets. Yahshua went with him. Yahshua went with Moses down into Egypt. He was that rock in the cloud that led the children of Israel out of Egypt by Moses. Moses is the visible leader, Yahshua the invisible leader. It's always been that way, clear on down to the gathering of 144,000. And as soon as they're gathered, you're going to see Yahshua visible. It's only going to be the saints be able to see him, though. So this Elijah that we're going to read about now, that represents 144,000, is antitypical Joshua the son of Joseph, or antitypical David, or this or that messenger of the covenant Malachi 3, or it's that porter at the door of John chapter 10. Okay. Ezekiel just comes out and calls him David. And other places calls him David, Hosea, a lot of Jeremiah and Isaiah all referring to him as David. But Ezekiel referred to him as David. All right, let's go on. So we're going to read about Elijah now, the visible person here in these last days. If Enoch represents the great multitude of Revelation 7-9, then Elijah represents the 144,000. So only two in the world's history have been translated without seeing death. Further proof is not necessary. However, other reasons shall be given why Elijah typified the 144,000. Elijah saw the drought and the famine in Israel. So will the 144,000. For we read in the Great Controversy 469, they have seen the earth wasted with the famine and pestilence, the sun having power to scorch men with a great heat. Elijah had a mantle over his shoulder, 2 Kings 2:8. Likewise, 144,000 had a mantle, and they were all clothed with a glorious white mantle from their shoulders to their feet. Early Writings, page 17. Quoting from the Testimony of the Ministers, page 475, prophecy must be fulfilled. For the Yahweh says, "Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh." Somebody is to come in the spirit and power of the Elijah. See, this says somebody is to come in the spirit, and this is shown Ellen G. White. "And when he appears, men may say, 'You are too earnest, you do not interpret the scriptures in the proper way.' Let me tell you how to teach your message." Well, I've already been through this with the last prophet that I was associated with. Sister White does not mean to say that she is that prophet Elijah, and plainly says a prophet must come, and it is said to be a prophet with the same spirit and power of the Elijah, just like John the Baptist was. This prophet must come before Ezekiel 9 is fulfilled. For the prophecy of Ezekiel is similar unto Elijah's experience with Israel in the days of Ahab. Elijah's work in the days of Ahab, king of Israel, was to prove Israel that they had apostatized, and after doing so, he took the priests or prophets and cut their heads off and threw them in the brook. Such was the spirit and power of the Elijah. For reading the Testimonies of Ministers, page 445, this sealing of the servants of the Yahweh, the 144,000 in Revelation 7, is the same that was shown unto Ezekiel in the vision. Then the sealing of the 144,000 is the same as Ezekiel 9, and the marking by the man with the writer's ink horn is the seal. As soon as the marking is done, the five men with the slaughter weapons go after him and slay both old and young, both maids and little children and women, and they begin at the ancient men which were before the house. So the first three people then that were sealed, starting Ezekiel 9, was Elijah, David, Catherine Brunken, and Alan DeLong. That began the sealing. Had Ezekiel's 9 sealing mark. Okay. It is at this time that 144,000 are marked and sealed. Ezekiel 9 fits Elijah's experience for this reason. The prophet or the message is called Elijah, with the spirit and power of Elijah. For the prophet Elijah thought all Israel had apostatized, and that he alone was left, but the Yahweh said he had 7,000 men that had not bowed a knee to Baal. 7 signifies a complete or a perfect number, which stands as a symbol. In this instance, meaning a complete number of thousands, for the complete number of the very elect is 144,000. So we too, like the Elijah, think the whole church is drifted into the world, bowed the knee to Baal. Thus Elijah stands as a type of the 144,000 living translated saints. Okay. Moses, type of the resurrection of the just. Now first I want to go and read to you from the Colossians chapter 1 verse 13, where it talks about being translated into the kingdom of his dear son, who hath delivered us from the power of darkness and hath translated us into the kingdom of his dear son. This translation started in 2002 at Kermit, Texas. When he started delivering the saints, he started with the wave sheaf offering, House of David. And he delivered us from the power of darkness. Now, the man of sin, in this case happened to be Antiochus Judas Iscariot, Rhodes W. Johnson, and we had to be delivered from the power of the darkness that we were placed with. We were placed with that power of darkness. But we had a light. We had a light at the end of that power of darkness. And that was a light coming from the throne of David. And I want to show it to you from the scriptures. In 1 Kings 11:36, he says, "And unto his son will I give one tribe, that David my servant may have a light always before me in Jerusalem, the city which I have chosen me to put my name there." In 2 Kings 8:19, it says, "Yet the Yahweh would not destroy Judah for David his servant's sake, as he promised him to give him always a light and to his children." In 2 Chronicles 21:7, it says, "Howbeit the Yahweh would not destroy the house of David because of the covenant that he had made with David, and as he promised to give a light to him and to his sons forever." Okay, now Yahshua is one of the sons of David. That is, the Father has given his son, David's son here on earth. That's in Luke 1:32. And I'm a son of David. And I'm the antitypical David. And so therefore it says, "Howbeit the Yahweh would not destroy the house of David because of the covenant that he had made with David, and as he promised to give a light unto him and unto his sons forever." And where does that light come from? It comes from Yahshua. Now in Nehemiah 9:12, it says, "Moreover, thou leddest them in the day by a cloudy pillar, and in the night by a pillar of fire, to give them light in the way wherein they should go." Okay. So it says in Nehemiah 9:19, "Yet thou in thy manifold mercies forsookest them not in the wilderness, for the pillar of the cloud departed not from them by the day to lead them in the way, neither the pillar of the fire by the night to show them light and the way wherein they should go." Now let us continue on here. He says, "Thus Elijah stands as a type of the 144,000. In other words, David was also a type of the 144,000. Okay. Moses, type of the resurrection of the just. Moses, upon the Mount of the Transfiguration, was a witness unto Yahshua's victory over sin and death. for he represented those who shall come forth from the grave at the resurrection of the just. Desire of Ages, page 421. Moses represents the first or the general resurrection of Revelation 20, verse 6. Type of the special resurrection is our next title. If Moses represents the general resurrection, who then would represent the mixed or special resurrection of Daniel 12, 2? We have the one of Matthew 27, 52, and 53. And the graves were open, and many bodies of the saints which slept arose and came out of the graves after his resurrection and went into the holy city and appeared unto many. The saints who had part in this resurrection were gathered from all ages, some who perhaps had lived at the very time Yahshua was preaching and were acquainted with him and his work, were witnesses unto his resurrection. Read Early Writings, page 184, Desire of Ages, page 786. There is still another reason why Matthew 27:52 is a type of this mixed resurrection. Those who were resurrected with the Yahshua witnessed of the deity of the Yahshua to the very ones who crucified him. Speaking of this mixed resurrection, Daniel says, "And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life and some to shame and everlasting contempt. And there will be some righteous included who live and witness the crucifixion, also those who crucified him and pierced him. For Revelation 1:7 says, Behold, he cometh with the clouds, and every eye shall see him, and they also which pierced him. Therefore the resurrection, that witness of the power of the Elohim unto these murderers of his son, typified the just who are raised in the mixed special resurrection. Okay, for the type of the second resurrection, the wicked who come up in the mixed resurrection with Daniel 12:2, and who must die the second death at the coming of Yahshua, typify the ones who come up at the end of the millennium, called the resurrection of the wicked. Read Great Controversy, page 661 and 662. Early Writings, page 52 and 53. Type of the second death. It has been a perplexing question whether the wicked ones who arise in the special resurrection of Daniel 12:2 continue to live or die with the living wicked at the second coming of the Yahshua and be resurrected at the end of the 1,000 years. As Elohim leaves nothing undone, he has foretold everything in the prophecy and types as well. If we have a type for every other event, we must have a type of this. For the wicked ones who are resurrected must die with the rest of the wicked at the coming of Yahshua in the clouds to typify the second death at the end of the millennium. Now the question is, will they arise again in the second resurrection with the wicked? And answer this question, Early Writings, pages 292, says that at the first resurrection all come forth in the immortal bloom, but at the second the marks of the curse are visible on all. The kings and noblemen of the earth, the mean and low, the learned and the unlearned, come forth together. All behold the Son of Man, and those very men who despise and mock him, who put the crown of thorns upon his sacred brow, and smote him with the reed. Behold him and all his kingly majesty, those who spit upon him in the hour of his trial, now turn from his piercing gaze and from the glory of his countenance. Those who drove the nails through his hands and feet now look upon the marks of his crucifixion. Those who thrust the spear into his side, behold the marks of their cruelty on his belly. By this we understand that these very men are there again in the second resurrection. Therefore they were resurrected the second time at the end of the 1,000 years to die in the second death. We per se themselves typified by dying the second death with the living at the second coming of the Yahshua and the clouds. Thus we have a prophecy and a type for every event that has or will take place in this wicked world of ours. Only one thing I disagree with here. She says that those that die are resurrected here before probation closes. They die with the wicked at the end of this world, and then they go through the 1,000 years. But Jehovah says they don't. They're the type of those that's going to be resurrected and destroyed in the second death. But Ellen G. White says they represent the type, but they're going to be resurrected again at the end of the 1,000 years. To die would be a third death, which is wrong. B.T. Hall had it right. They only die one time, I mean a second time, after the resurrection here before probation closes. Okay. So it says, a thought of the perfection. For the resurrection of Moses, the resurrection at the time when Yahshua arose, the special resurrection of Daniel 12:2, the first resurrection of Revelation 20, verse 6, the translation of Enoch, the translation of Elijah, the general translation at the coming of the Yahshua. Okay, a thought of perfection. Number one, the resurrection of Moses. Number two, the resurrection at the time when Yahshua arose. Number three, the special resurrection of Daniel 12:2. Number four, the first resurrection, Revelation 20, verse 6. Number five, the translation of Enoch. Number six, the translation of Elijah. And number seven, the general translation at the coming of Yahshua. Thus, we again have the number seven, the sign of perfection. All are finished. The four resurrections and the three translations comprise all the saints resurrected and translated, all of which make a total of seven, or the end. Procession of the redeemed. What a wonderful parade it will be when the redeemed of all ages shall march through the golden streets in the heavenly places amidst the pure and the blessed. Escorting the great procession, we see the millions of angels who minister to the redeemed in all ages. Number two, of Moses, the type of the resurrection, and the first man to write in the Bible, we see marching ahead as the leader of the resurrection one, clothed in the white and a glittering a golden crown on his head. For the resurrected ones, whom he represents are class four, clad in white robes and having golden crowns. Number three. Next we see innocent Abel, representing the martyrs with the glorious white robe and red around his garment as a border, leading millions of martyrs of all ages. And class three, whose robes are just like the one worn by their leader, Abel. And number four, we now behold good old Enoch having around his head a dazzling white wreath, above it a lovely crown brighter than the sun, and on his right arm a glorious palm. It is by him the great translated multitudes are both led and represented, all in the pure white robes, palms in their hands, and golden crowns on their heads. Number five, last of all the redeemed, and to brave Elijah with a glorious white mantle from his shoulders to his feet, a type and leader of the most wonderful company, though small in number, being a special company with a special experience, a royal priesthood, the 144,000 in the pure white, and a glorious mantle from their shoulders under their feet with the stars in their crowns, Revelation 14:5, and in their mouth is found no guile, for they are without fault before the throne of the Yahweh. Number six, if the sons of the Elohim, Adams, from other worlds presented themselves before the Yahweh, according to Job 1:6, in a council meeting, then surely the sons of Elohim, Adams, from all the worlds would not be excluded from the most wonderful and the only procession in the eternity's endless expanse. Number seven. Last of all, Yahshua and the majestic heavenly throne with 10,000 times 10,000 and thousands of thousands of angels. What a wonderful getting that will be. Can we find anything more harmonious than this in all the Bible? It will be we again have the complete biblical number 7, and it cannot be made more or less, and yet include all. Or this not to wake up our interest and zeal when we see what a glorious event is in the store for the Elohim's faithful people? An explanation of the writer's inkhorn of the early writings, page 279. Okay, it says now, an explanation of the writer's inkhorn of early writings, page 279, says the man with the writer's inkhorn of Ezekiel 9 is the one who performs the sealing of the 144,000 long before the close of the probation. Some may misunderstand the statement made in the early writing and thereby be confused. For the benefit of such a one, we make this explanation. According to the statement found in the early writing, on page 279, we read, I saw angels hurrying to and fro in heaven. An angel with a writer's inkhorn by his side returned from the earth and reported unto Yahshua that his work was done, and the saints were numbered and sealed. Then I saw Yahshua, who had been ministering before the ark containing the Ten Commandments, throw down the censer. He raised his hand and with a loud voice said, It is done. For it is unmistakably plain that it was an angel with a writer's inkhorn, and that his work was done. Also that Yahshua worked was finished in the heavenly sanctuary, probation closed. Because this angel has a writer's inkhorn by his side, same as the man in Ezekiel 9, is no proof that it is the same angel. For it may be supposed that there would be more than one angel with such an instrument. However, it may be the same sealing angel in both instances, but the thought is, when the man of Ezekiel 9 seals 144,000, his work continues on through the harvest time. The saints must be numbered and sealed in this generation, the same as those who have been sealed in the ages past. Evidently, his work has been continuing ever since sin entered into the human family, perhaps beginning with Abel, and would continue to the close of probation, at which time his work would be done. Okay, we're going to go now into section 3 of the Shepherd God, volume 1, and the title is Esau and Jacob. Now, this is getting close down to our time now, in which this is present truth now for us here in this 12th parabolic hour. And Isaac entreated Yahweh for his wife because she was barren, and the Yahweh was entreated of him. And Rebekah's wife conceived, and the children struggled together within her, and she said, If it be so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire the Yahweh, and the Yahweh said unto her, Two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. When her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red, all over like a hairy garment, and they called his name Esau. And after that came his brother out, and his hand took hold on Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob. Genesis 25:21-26. Inspiration says that Rebekah had no children, and Isaac entreated the Yahweh, and the Yahweh was entreated of him, and the Yahweh gave her twins. If this be the case, certainly it was not an accident, for the Yahweh was in it. But if she only asked for a child, why did he give her twins? We do not suppose that the Yahweh gave her twins and caused a lot of trouble in the family, as it did. Why did they struggle within the mother? while one red and hairy and the other white and smooth, and why one take hold of the heel of the other. All these questions have come to our minds. Whatever the reason, it was divinely designed, for he gave her the children. Certainly no one would think Elohim did this without a purpose in view. Elohim himself told the mother, "It is an object lesson," for he said unto her, "Two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels, and that one people shall be stronger than the other people." It is true that the result was two nations on the stage of action, Edom and Israel. But where is the lesson? Whatever the lesson, it must be to Elohim's people. It cannot be for the Old Testament time, for they never profited by it in any way. For we read in Galatians 4:22-25 that Isaac typified the New Testament church and Ishmael the Old, where it is written that Abraham had two sons, the one by a bondmaid, the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born after the flesh, but he of the free woman was by the promise, which things are an allegory. For these are the two covenants, the one from Mount Sinai, which genus to bondage, which is Agar. But this Agar is Mount Sinai in the Arabia, and answers to Jerusalem, which now is and is in bondage with her children, Jerusalem in the north, from the Mount Sinai in the south. For the Paul writes here that Ishmael represents Israel after the flesh. Agar represents the church that was organized at the Mount Sinai at the time when Moses selected the 70 elders. See Patriarchs and Prophets, page 382. For the Sanhedrin was composed of 70 men, therefore the number 70 represents a church organization. Thus Paul says, "For this Agar is Mount Sinai, woman, symbol of the church, which is in Arabia." This same organization, after they wandered 40 years in the wilderness, crossed the Jordan and established themselves in the Jerusalem. For this Agar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, and answereth unto Jerusalem, which now is and is in bondage with their children. Agar then symbolized the church before the cross, the Jerusalem of old. Again we read, beginning with the 26th verse, that Jerusalem which is above, New Jerusalem in heaven now, Revelation 21, is free, which is the mother of us all. For it is written, "Rejoice, thou barren that bearest not. Sarah, break forth and cry, thou that travailest not. For the desolate hath many more children." And desolate, for Sarah stepped aside and gave her husband to Agar. Then she which hath an husband, Agar. Now we, brethren, as Isaac was, are the children of promise. But as then he that was born after flesh, Ishmael, persecuted him that was born after the Spirit, Isaac, even so it is now. Galatians 4:26-29. For the ancient Israel, in the days of the apostles, persecuted the Christian. Here inspiration says, Sarah represents Jerusalem, which is above in heaven now. Revelation 21. And she is the mother of us all. Paul in the writing to the New Testament church. Now what does it mean that she's a mother to us all? Okay, meaning everybody that makes up the New Testament church now, that are preordained, called to help be a pillar in the temple of Yahweh, then they Sarah is your mother. Okay, so now those that had an opportunity to be a pillar in the temple and yet they ended up flunking out, so to speak, and said, that tells me then that they were, that Sarah was not their mother, that Agar was their mother. So, who was the mother of Ben Roden? Agar. Who was the mother of Rhoda Johnson? Agar. of the Old Testament, Mount Sinai, that generous to bondage. Okay. Now we, brethren, as Isaac was, are the children of the promise. Paul means that Isaac represents the children of the New Testament and Sarah is a symbol of the church. Coming back to our subject, Esau and Jacob, whatever the lesson of these twins, it cannot apply to the Old Testament church. For if Isaac is the father of them and represents the New Testament church, then the lesson must apply to the church represented by him. If the father was 60 years of age at the time Esau and Jacob were born, the lesson cannot be for the early part of the church, for the symbol must be for a latter period. That's in our period today. That's for the 11th and the 12th parabolic hour. Actually, it's for the 11th parabolic hour. That's where the antiquity Esau and Jacob was developed. Okay? That's the time period, a symbol of the struggle. For the children struggled before they were delivered. In this, too, must be a lesson. It is intended to point out the time when the application is made. It has been defined by the father's age that the lesson is for a latter period. The children's struggle was before they were delivered. The lesson then is for the alien people just before they are delivered. Okay, the time and church. The lesson cannot be in the two churches. Why? Because they are born from one mother. They must come under the same message. Why? Because they are begotten by the same Father. If this is a generation that will witness the end and the church that shall be delivered and be translated without tasting death, then this must be the time to which this lesson applies. Now the question is, in which church shall it find its fulfillment? It can only find its fulfillment in Yahweh's true church. If the Protestant churches have fallen and are termed Babylon, then they have neither part nor lot in this lesson. If the Seventh-day Adventist church is the true Israel and has a message which no other organization teaches, and if the message we bear is the advent of Yahshua and the end of the world in this generation, and then this is the church. Esau and Jacob, two classes of people. All right, let's continue on now. It says, for the Bible says the twins represent two classes of the people. If this is true, then we have two classes of people in the church. One class is represented by Esau, and the other by the Jacob. So we had those two classes. Down there at Kermit, we had those two classes. Okay, referring to Testimonies, Ministries, page 46, we read, there are two opposing influences continually exercised on the members of the church. One influence is working for the purification of the church, and the other for the corrupting of the people of Elohim. One of the twins is red and hairy, and the other smooth and white. Both people are sinful. Why? Because Esau was red, which is scarlet, the sign of sin. Jacob was white, but the name betrays a man, for the name Jacob means deceiver. Okay. Esau was the first, was the one born first. Whatever was to be inherited by the birthright was to be Esau. For the law of the Bible is that the first born had the right to be to the priesthood. For this reason, Jacob coveted Esau's birthright. Esau then represents a class of the priesthood. Now, in Kings, in the Old Testament, I believe it's in Chronicles, where it says Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, after his father died, Jehoshaphat said, Jehoshaphat gave gold and silver to his other sons, but to the firstborn son, Jehoram, he gave the kingdom. Okay, because he was the firstborn. So, the firstborn today in the house of Israel is the first one to inherit the kingdom from his father. Okay, I'm talking about the prophetic figures. Okay. So now it says, symbol of hair. As he was born hairy, his body must have been covered with a heavy coat of hair. Well, when Jacob wished to deceive his father in order to obtain the blessing, Rebekah, his mother, covered his neck and hands with the skins of the kids. Isaac's suspicion of whether it was Esau or Jacob speaking compelled him to examine the body of his son. Genesis 27:22-23. And Jacob went nearer unto Isaac his father, and he felt him, and said, The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau. And he discerned him not, because his hands were hairy, as his brother's Esau's hand. So he blessed him. For the heavy coat of hair over Esau's body was unnatural, and the only reason why Elohim should have made him thus was to symbolize the character of the class he represents. The hair was a symbol of power, honor, glory, and talent. Elohim given gifts to enable him to execute the duties of his office as a family priest. The following reasons are given for believing thus. Elohim, in the beginning, created man and a woman. He made the man to be king and ruler over all his creation, and he crowned him with the honor, glory, and power, talents necessary to execute his office. To the man he gave the beard, and not to the woman. Samson's hair was a symbol of his power. In 1 Corinthians 11:15, we read, But if the woman have long hair, it is a glory unto her. Okay, now we're going to the symbol of Esau's heel. At the birth of the twins, Esau came first and Jacob took hold of Esau's heel. Thus the younger was led out by the older. This could not have just happened, for it seemed to be a miracle. This is the only time our attention is called to an occurrence of this kind. Therefore, Elohim must have intended it so. And if he did, there must be a lesson in it. It would not be hard for one to see the lesson taught here by the miracle. Jacob was led out by the heel of Esau. Therefore, Esau must represent a class of leaders. Symbols of being red. Esau was born red, but Jacob white and smooth. As a rule, twins are born alike. But in this instance, it was reversed. There is no similarity between Esau and Jacob as twin brothers in the character, appearance, color, or covering. Now, I had a twin brother, literally, and he was born first. He was black-headed, heavy, with a full head of hair. And I was born white-headed, bald-headed, with no hair at all on my head. My twin brother, full head of hair of black. And he looked like my mother, and I looked like my father. We didn't even look like we were kin to each other. Therefore, we have another miracle. This symbol is simple to understand. And another thing, I was the eighth one born in my family. My twin brother was the seventh one born. Okay, David was the eighth one born in his family. Red is the same as scarlet. The Bible uses scarlet as a symbol of sin, as in Isaiah 1:18, Revelation 17:3, Revelation 12:3. Esau represents a sinful class of people, as well as Jacob, but the class whom Esau represents are given great privileges and opportunities to make good. Symbol of Esau's character. The character of Esau's manhood reveals the character of the priesthood of whom he represents. Esau was a mighty hunter, a man of the field. All his interest was in game and his stomach, but very much disinterested in his position as a priest of the family. The class represented by him is far more interested in pleasure, gain, and the affairs of the world than they are in the Elohim's given privileges. Esau could not control his appetite. He thought more of his stomach than he did of his position, office of the priest. He represents a class of people whose God is their stomach. They would rather satisfy their lustful appetite than to execute their duty and keep Elohim's truth. Esau had a valuable blessing within his reach, the immortal inheritance of life. It was his privilege to bring forth and inherit the 12 sons, tribes of Israel. From Esau were to come prophets, kings, and princes. Through the line of Esau, the king of kings, the blessed Yahshua was to come. All of these wonderful blessings were to be his. There are many who are like Esau. He represents a class who have a special blessing within their reach. What is the blessing? It is an inheritance. The 12 tribes of the true Israel, 144,000, who are to be as priests and kings. Read volume 5, page 475, 476. This class has the privilege of bringing about the second coming of Yahshua and to lead the church over the borders of the heavenly Canaan and into the glories of the Elohim. Just as the line of Esau had the privilege to bring about the first advent of Yahshua, and if Esau failed on his part, just so, this class represented by Esau is in danger of failing on their part. Think of the loss of the inheritance, immortal life, that is, as enduring as the loss of Elohim, the creator of the universe, happiness, unmeasurable, and an eternal weight of the glory. But Esau lusted for a favorite dish and sacrificed his birthright to gratify appetite and received but little for it. A bowl of red pottage, he represents his class who have been given great light and privileges to make good but fail to do so. This class is to sacrifice the eternal weight of glory which no human lips can tell. Esau flattered himself that he could dispose of his birthright at will and buy it back at the pleasure, but when he sought to buy it back, even at a great sacrifice on his part, he was not able to do so. He sought for the repentance carefully and with tears, but it was all in vain. How fearful the thought to sacrifice truth for the world again at the expense of the life everlasting. Read volume 2, page 38 and 39. For the following quotation is taken from Patriarchs and Prophets, page 182. As Esau woke to see the folly of his rash exchange when it was too late to recover his loss, so it will be in the day of Elohim with those who have bartered their heirship to heaven for the selfish gratification. Because of his indifference to the divine blessings and requirements, Esau is called in the scripture a profane person, for he represents those who lightly value the redemption purchased by them or for them by the Yeshua and are ready to sacrifice their heirship to heaven for the perishable things of the earth. Multitudes live for the present with no thought or care for the future. Like Esau, they cry, "Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die." Patriarchs and Prophets, page 181. Alright, it says, the symbol of the pottage. Jacob was a plain man dwelling in tents, while Esau hunted in the field. Jacob sawed pottage made of the lentils and colored red. We do not know the kind of the coloring Jacob used to obtain the tempting shade of that fancy dish. Evidently, he alone knew the secret. And Jacob sawed pottage, and Esau came from the field, and he was faint. And Esau said to Jacob, "Feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage, for I am faint." Therefore was his name called Edom. And Jacob said, "Sell me this day thy birthright." And Esau said, "Behold, I am at the point of dying. What profit shall this birthright do to me?" And Jacob said, "Swear to me this day." and he swore on him, and he sold his birthright unto Jacob. Okay. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, and he did eat and drink, and rose up and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. Genesis 25:29-34. But Esau came from the field that day without any game, and he entered the house. He saw Jacob garnishing the fancy articles of food. Immediately Esau exclaimed, "Feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage, for I am faint." Esau was not faint because of the great hunger, but seeing the new article of food could not control his appetite. Jacob's answer was, "Sell me this day thy birthright, if thou must have any of this pottage." And Esau said, "Behold, I am on the point to die, and what profit shall this birthright do unto me?" Esau was not on the point to die because of the hunger or physical ailment, for a sick man cannot eat as he did, and neither was it because of the lack of food, for he was in his father's house, and Isaac was a rich man. It was because of his lust for the pottage, for he did eat and drink and rose up and went his way. For the symbol of the pottage is a healthy form. Because of his indifference to the divine blessings and requirements, Esau is called in Scripture a profane person. He represents those who lightly value the redemption purchased for them by the Yahshua and are ready to sacrifice their heirship to heaven for the perishable things of the earth. Multitudes live for the present with no thought or care for the future. Like Esau, they cry, "Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die." Taken from Patriarchs and Prophets, page 181. As Esau woke to see the folly of his rash exchange when it was too late to recover his loss, so it will be in the day of Elohim with those who have bartered their heirship to heaven for the selfish gratification. See on Patriarchs and Prophets, page 182. We must make our choice while we are given the freedom to select either the pottage or the birthright. This brings a close to this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive to hear this message and more. We're going to close now with a song. Work for the night is coming when man can work no more.
Work for the night is coming. Work through the morning hours. Work while the dew is sparkling, work mid springing flowers. Work while the day grows brighter under the glowing sun. Work for the night is coming when man's work is done. Work for the night is coming, work through the sunny noon. Fill brightest hours with labor, rest comes sure and soon. Give every flying minute something to keep in store. Work for the night is coming when man works no more. Work for the night is coming under the sunset sky. Work while the bright tints are glowing. Work for daylight flies. Work till the last beam faded to shine no more. Work while the night is darkening, when man's work is whole.